Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Welcome to episode 76 of Comic Book Nation, the official podcast of comicbook.com. I'm your host, Kofi Outlaw, and back with me again, I don't know what I was thinking, but...
Together 76. Again.
I have to, like, reset, because this is 76, so we just put to bed 75 episodes,
it's
and now...
a new era.
Yeah, it's a new era,
Season 2.
There you go. So, season 2 of Comic Book Nation, and with me still here on the couch is my co-host, Matthew Aguilar.
What's up, everybody?
And our new semi-regular co-host over here, who just kind of found that out, like, a minute ago, Janelle Wheeler.
Very excited.
On the couch.
Very excited to be here.
And over there, lurking in the cut, where arguably he belongs, is Mr. J.K. Schmidt. I said Schmidt. I don't know why I said that.
Put some respect on my name, please.
I will. It's Schmidt.
Well, thank you, Birdman.
As in. But J.K.'s here because... He is back because he is one of our resident Star Wars experts, and you might have heard there's a little something happening in Star Wars this week that we are here to talk about. That is that final trailer for The Rise of Skywalker. So JK's here to kind of keep us on point because you always need a Star Wars troll with you to just make sure you're not saying the wrong things or capitalizing the wrong things, and this man keeps us on point, so... JK's here to help us out.
Would you call him a troll?
No, I said...
You said Star Wars troll.
I said, I was generally advising to keep one around. I did not qualify what this man
was. I was like, Brandon's not here.
No. Oh, wow. That's a deep cut, but a shade thrown at Brandon Davis. Richard's over in the booth, probably loving that. But no, it's all Star Wars lovers over here, so we're going to talk about that new Rise of Skywalker trailer. But we got more to talk about that JK can lend his expertise to. We are also going to be talking about the big shakeup at Marvel TV that happened just before we got in here this morning. We're also going to be talking about another movie trailer that people might remember is still out there in addition to Star Wars. And we are going to do a deep dive breakdown of HBO's Watchmen, which is beginning a bit of buzz and is a talking point right now and a pretty unique product. So we're going to talk about all of that. But first up, in our news flash, let's just start right at the beginning with the big thing. The trailer for Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker, is now out. And it's going to be our final trailer, allegedly, until opening day. And if history serves, that's probably true until we get some, promo trailers closer to release day. Overall, it's been kind of an interesting reaction to this trailer. We were all hyped for it. The whole world was hyped for it. It dropped during Monday Night Football. I was actually seeing The Lighthouse. I was seeing a screening of The Lighthouse, and as soon as I walked out of that crazy thing, my phone blew up with Star Wars stuff. And I sat down and watched it, and, I mean, it's no secret. I put it out on Twitter that I'm kind of, split about it. It was okay. Yeah, it was okay. I wasn't really enthused. And I'm a person who usually is, gets emotional at Star Wars trailers in particular. But this one was very... kind of J.J. Abrams. It reminded me of Star Trek Into Darkness again, which I reference when talking about J.J. sometimes. But I feel like this trailer played it too safe. It's still trying to hold back so many secrets and details of even basic plot points that really when you think about it, what you're getting in these trailers is a lot of nostalgia shoved at you.
That's such a good point. I did not even think about that.
You get a lot of the old stuff. And they've been playing up that this is the ending of the saga. That's it. But you have no real idea, what is happening in this actual movie.
But don't you typically love that in trailer?
No.
The one that always says, I don't want...
But I need thematic hooks. The last... I'm going to get roasted for this. But The Last Jedi is a great example of that main trailer that came out and kind of thematically hooked you on this idea of Rey and struggling between the darkness and the light and the temptations and Kylo being there and this really ending scene that suggested maybe she does, convert. Maybe she does you know, unite with Kylo. That was a lot of intrigue kind of pulling you. And you knew the basic premise of the movie.
Yeah.
She goes to meet Luke. The training's not what she thinks. She kind of sets off on her own and has to face this temptation.
That was all shown in the trailer.
Yeah, you got that basic lineup and none of the twists, like none of the big stuff.
I feel like we didn't get any of that at all. However, I didn't notice that. So no, that's a good sign. And I felt very emotional watching it. And I am not a huge Star Wars like fanatic. I like it. I watch it. My parents raised me right. Okay. But I'm not as big into it as a lot of my friends are. And I actually got teary-eyed twice, and I got the goosebumps.
What got to you?
C-3PO's saying goodbye. It honestly, I know some people have said like maybe he's saying goodbye because they all die, but I felt like okay, I think he's like for some reason plugged into this ship because he's dying or something like that. And then also just I don't know, like everything just gave me the goosebumps, like all the different landscapes. I just thought it was really visually beautiful to look at.
I mean, you have a good point. I mean, the comparison, I think, is apt as far as Last Jedi, you see the thread of the story and you get a better idea.
Absolutely.
I didn't like Last Jedi's trailers. I love Last Jedi. Like, it's one of my favorite. Like, I loved it way more than Force Awakens. But Force Awakens had better trailers. This is, again, in the same suit of it's all the heart points. It hits all the that nostalgia
the
works in a very small space.
Oh, the hug. The hug.
Yeah, like all
the tears.
So much stuff. I came away from that trailer going like, oh my God, like I want to see this movie.
Me too.
I'm extremely excited. I'm probably going to be, I hope that JJ, but I hope that he adapts some of the Rian Johnson stuff, you know, in a way that isn't just like a giant appealing to all the vocal Star Wars fans. Like, do some interesting things. Maybe do put your own spin on stuff. I feel like he will end up playing things safe in the movie. But as a trailer, I loved this trailer. Like, I came away excited.
I loved it. But now that I've heard your take on it, I'm like, I'm noticing those holes. I'm noticing those problems.
Let me put out this PSA. I'm not one of those people who needs to rain on other Star Wars fans' parades. Like, if you like it, like, and this trailer does its job, like, in the sense that, yes, I'm definitely going to go see this movie. I definitely want to see this movie. It's just, I have a weird thing about, like I said, I have a weird connection to Star Wars trailers. Like, they've been some of the most, like, replayed, rewatched trailers besides Joker that I've ever, you know, sat down and watched. Yeah, Matt, that was for you. But, and I remember where I was when I saw, the trailer for Revenge of the Sith and knowing that was the end of the prequels and how epic that trailer was. And it's just, this one feels like product to me, I think, is like what it is. This feels like we got to the point where this is just fully packaged product, and that's kind of what it feels like, where every shot was carefully selected and make sure we're not giving away anything, but we're going to have this rousing score. And I think the real hero of this trailer is the score.
Beautiful.
By John Williams.
So like, unbelievable.
Even when it's just like mundane and like dying down, like the score is rousing and so like, and if you play it on big speakers, like booming, and it's just like, it's hard not to get emotional from that. Or like, yeah.
I was listening to that sucker on my phone and it's still
same.
Like,
yeah, your phone's like shaking out of your hand.
Like, so good.
I watched it 5 times in a row.
Wow.
Yeah. I watched it on like, I did it.
Yeah.
I watched it about 3 to 4 times on different venues, like on a phone, on a tablet, on a TV with a sound, like all that stuff, just to kind of take it all in. It's going to be epic when it plays in the theater. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, the thing with Star Wars right now is that, I mean, they don't have to do anything. They can just put the movie out and not tell you anything about it before it comes out. The fandom is in such a weird spot where basically they're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. That's one of the franchises that can benefit from being completely silent and kind of just letting people make up their own minds about it. So they're not going to give you everything.
No.
It's the 9th film in a saga. So all they really got to do is say, hey, look, here are all your favorite people. They're back. We're not going to tell you what they're going to do because it's such an event. You have to wait for it. You know, you have to wait to experience it.
And like I said, they're playing up the event status of it. And I get that.
Was it a good trailer? It was serviceable.
Yeah.
There's nothing memorable. But there's the fact that it's Star Wars.
I think there could have pushed a little bit more. Like the thing that really started to like light my eyes up is when we got like vague glimpses of thematic stuff, like Poe saying like people will follow us if we lead. Like that whole thing about becoming new rebel leaders is interesting. The Rey stuff seems to be getting confusing for the last film where she's like, nobody really knows me. She's like teen angst. But that could be, again, interesting. Just a little more pushes on those, I guess, I would have liked. I still think, personally, and JK and I talked about this, I still think the D23 trailer is the best representation of how to balance the old and the new.
Because
that trailer does a great job of bringing back all the old nostalgia and the voiceovers and stuff, and then showing you just a buttload of new exciting footage that, like, you're like, whoa, and then it ends with Rey flipping out the double lightsaber, and you're like, oh, and then, like, that's it.
Well,
and, like,
on the flip side of that, I mean, the big reveal was the dark side Rey. But if you were to end this trailer with that, it would kind of set a different mood than what we're going to get in this movie.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, like, as cool as that was, if they were to do that for this trailer, it kind of would have a weird feel to it because, you know, like, that's what The Last Jedi did. It was set ending on a down note. And if they ended a trailer on a down, you'd be like, oh, what's going to happen now?
So. No, but I'm just referencing, like, it was the wow moment.
Oh, yeah.
This one
ends. It was definitely a better
clip. Like, I feel like almost like a epilogue moment that we're seeing early, which is the voiceover from Luke and Leia. Like, I wouldn't be shocked at all if Luke and Leia's Force ghost saying, the Force will be with you, and then Carrie Fisher has the last word with always is, like, the end of this film. So, like, I get where that's coming from, but, like, it is this conundrum that we're kind of stuck in forever now. Like, marketing the big end to a whole saga versus marketing, like, one movie.
Yeah.
Right.
And the different approach.
And it seems the internet's pretty split, too.
Yeah. Gosh, it's crazy. Both. I couldn't believe how mean some of these comments were. I thought I loved it. And then I started reading the comments just under the Instagram post that you guys posted. And I was like, I guess I'm wrong.
Yeah, like, I mean,
Star Wars fandom.
I'm wrong to love this.
No, no, people are split, but, like, and it's very divisive split. Like, you love the 3PO thing, and I can't stand the 3PO.
Oh,
thing.
No.
I'm, like, with the camp of people who started ragging and making entire threads, like, so 3PO is saying this to his close friends who he's, like, barely hung out with in this trilogy. Like,
that's
saying
true.
Goodbye to, like, Poe.
God.
Just be like, look, C3PO, what are you looking at? I don't know you. I don't know
you. I didn't even pick up on that. That's
I want to die now. Everybody I love
R2 were there. Maybe he was exclusively talking to
you. And other people are saying. Dude, trust me, go look on Twitter. There's whole threads of people analyzing this and saying, yeah, he was just saying F everybody else. Like, you two are cool. You're cool. Everybody else. I'm just taking a look at my two friends.
I would almost love it.
Kill me now.
Yeah.
If it ends up being that.
That'd be great. Maybe we'll never know.
But
hold on to our own idea.
Yeah, but I mean, it's a Star Wars trailer. It's out there. It's getting views like crazy. And yeah, the tickets are flying off the shelf. And we're all going to go see it.
Yep.
Yeah, I haven't met the person. I mean, and I don't even believe that person when I meet him who's like, oh, that trailer, I'm not going to see that end of that last Star Wars movie. I saw all 8. I'm not seeing the 9th. Like, and yeah, I don't know who that person is. But enjoy your shack, sir. So we're all going to go see this. I just hope, like I said in my tweet, like, I still have fingers crossed that the final product is going to be rousing and really moving and actually have a good story and it's going to deliver. Like, I mean, all the rumors seem pretty interesting so far. So I'm not, like, hating on this whatsoever. But final thoughts, anybody?
I'm just excited. I can't wait. And I'm going to stop reading the comments so that I keep being excited.
Don't let them get into your head. Nope. Yeah, especially not Star Wars comments.
Yeah.
It gets really dark. Really.
Mad respect to all of the Star Wars fandom out
Half
there.
Half of the ones to my Star Wars articles are JK.
That is true. And when it's not him, it's probably
right.
Patrick.
You have to have the right opinion, you know?
Spell Wookiee right.
Oh, well, yeah. There's two E's, Matt. There's two E's in Wookiee.
There are? See? Everything. These nerds keep you on point. All right.
I love it.
Moving right along. So we're going to move from Star Wars over to Marvel because something we've been talking about for a while now is kind of been shaken out really fast here in the last few weeks. Which is what the future of Marvel TV would be under Disney, especially with these Disney Plus shows coming. If you're unfamiliar and been living under a rock, Disney Plus is launching like next month. We're getting a whole bunch of Marvel TV shows that are directly connected to the MCU and get like $12 million per episode. So they're like long form movies, basically.
So exciting.
And we wondered with all these official kind of Marvel tied shows, you know, officially tied to the MCU coming out, where does that leave like Jeff Loeb and Marvel TV? And guys, we now have an answer. Jeff Loeb is headed out the door. He's leaving Marvel TV in November, right in time for those Disney Plus shows to launch. He's like, you took away my Ghost Rider show? F you, I'm out. Like, he's leaving. And if you don't know, like, the history, Jeff Loeb is head of Marvel TV. So he's the guy who made the Marvel Netflix universe happen. He made Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Agent Carter happen. Cloak and
Dagger,
Runaways, all those YA shows. But he also made Inhumans happen. He also made Iron Fist happen. Like, So it's been, and he also made parts of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. that we don't like happen. So, like, it's been kind of a spotty record. But the notorious thing is Jeff Loeb always had this feud with, like, Kevin Feige, where Kevin Feige would not let Jeff Loeb play with all the best toys in the toy bin.
That's messed up, man.
Because Marvel TV wasn't really officially recognized by the MCU, but they were, like, this married couple who had to go out and still go to dinner and pretend like they were together and smile for everybody and be like, we're just one big happy universe. And, like, internally it's like, no, you can't put the Defenders in anything. Screw you in your whole Netflix universe. And so Jeff Loeb is now taking a step out the door. And Kevin Feige has won that whole war because he just took over all of Marvel. So now he has the TV, the movies, the comics. We did
the
that whole thing,
now.
The games. If you want to make a little Marvel, like, I don't even know, like a little, I don't even know. I'm blanking on some simple toy.
He just owns
everything.
I think
he owns Marvel water balloons and like everything.
That's
like, yeah.
You know, so I know we're all looking at this like, you know, this is a long time coming. Like Loeb was on his way out the door and we can look at some of the like Inhumans, obviously it was a bomb and some of the other things. But if you kind of put it into context of you can't play with any of the cool stuff. So here's all our B and C and D-list characters.
Yeah.
He has more success than not. I mean, he
made
the Netflix universe pop with, at the time, yes, fans love Jessica Jones, but she wasn't an A-list person at that point. Daredevil was the closest he had to like a A-list hero.
I'm the only person that loved Danny Rand, apparently.
Iron Fist, right?
I loved it.
It's a little split.
Like,
I didn't like
the patron saint of lost causes. You love Iron Fist. You love Jared Leto's Joker.
What is
like,
wrong with me?
Nothing. Nothing. God bless.
I like the Star Wars trailer.
But like, there's more Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I would say that's kind of
split. No, it's good. There's more good than
Agent
bad.
Carter was good. Yeah. It got canceled.
Yep.
You know, like, he did a lot with not a lot.
Yeah, no, he, I mean.
So.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean, he did
him,
his thing, and it's always going to be the question, like, if they had trusted Jeff Loeb to do more with more, like, what would we have gotten? If season two of those Netflix shows could have gone bigger with more comic book or tie-in storylines, what then? Like, you know.
And two of those losses were with Buck.
Yeah, Scott Buck. Yeah, I mean, if there's one misstep in this whole thing, Jeff Loeb trusted Scott Buck, and Scott Buck... Yeah, he screwed you, buddy, because two seasons of Iron Fist and Inhumans Down the Drain was like the beginning of the death knell of the end.
Yeah,
for like
Cloak and Dagger, people seem to
it
like.
It was great.
Runaways, people seem to like. So,
yeah, no, I mean, he's done it like, so, I mean, this is just how it goes in business, though. You go to war, you win, you lose. Yeah. He lost this one. So.
He's going to end up somewhere.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
And that's kind of the funny part. He's out now like trying to get these first look deals and be like, I'm Jeff Loeb.
Is it 100% confirmed or is it all
just
hearsay? Yeah,
it's confirmed. He's trying to get like one of those first look deals from Netflix or Hulu. He's like, hey, pay me a ton of money and I'll make crappy shows for you.
Wouldn't it be hilarious if he did get it from Netflix though?
DC Universe, come calling.
Like, well, we had this $500 million set aside for J.J. Abrams. What are we going to do with it now?
I mean, Loeb is responsible for that wonderful Batman Superman run, which I liked until the last arc.
No, I mean, he's also, I mean, people forget that, like, before he did all this, he was a pretty accomplished comic book writer. I mean, he wrote The Long Halloween.
He wrote Batman Hush.
Yeah.
And he also wrote Ultimates 3. And that
and this is what we keep saying.
Which was terrible.
he's like a lesser, I mean, he's like a more accomplished version of David S. Goyer. Like, everything he picks out of the hat, every project could be a real hit or just like a real steaming pile of crap. Like, depends on the day and like how much they've had to drink, I'm sure. But like, yeah, this is going to be interesting to see where Jeff Loeb ends up. But I mean, I would love to see him just come back and do some comics, just cleanse his soul,
try some stuff.
Write some comic book stories again for a while because he was doing good at that. So,
perfect opportunity to hop ship to DC.
That's what I said. DC Universe, come calling. Hey,
we'll see.
We need a guy who can make a mildly popular universe to our not so mildly popular universe. We're not looking for hits. We don't have big dreams, but we want like medium success.
Oh my gosh, this is messed up.
Medium success. And you look like a medium success type of guy. All right.
Man.
Yeah, all right. So let's stop. Jeff Loeb, good luck.
I tried to big up Loeb.
Yeah.
I've liked him. I actually like him when he MCs like panels because it's like having your dad like MC a Marvel panel.
Oh, do you remember when he wore that kimono?
No.
Such poor
taste. I don't remember this.
Yeah, he does very interesting things and he comes out with bad jokes and outfits, and like I said, it's like
it's adorable. He's lovable.
Yeah, but that's what I love. It's kind of, he's like a character, and because he's so passionate, he really loves it.
Yeah,
that's
like
awesome.
I've never seen Jeff Loeb more happy than when he got to like make all the big Marvel TV big drops on like Saturday night of New York Comic Con every year. Like when he brought out Sigourney Weaver and like, you know, for Defenders, like all that stuff. So he's having a good time, and I hope his good time continues. I hope he lands on his feet. As for Marvel TV, I don't know.
Rest in
peace, Runaways.
What's up?
Rest in peace, Runaways.
RIP Runaways, RIP Cloak and Dagger, that crossover. Good luck. Thank you, everybody, and we'll see you at the relaunch.
Yeah.
All right, moving right along from Marvel to the esteemed halls of Valiant Comics. But Valiant Comics, remember those guys from the 90s? They came back.
Around?
And they're kind of still
in pog form.
Man, you guys are feisty today. I'm loving this.
Yeah, we're a little peppery today.
I'm a little ball
Taco
of
Tuesday. Don't mess with us on Taco Tuesday. It's all pepper.
Great.
Vin Diesel, you know, he's whittled his career down to these Fast and Furious movies. I don't. Without being peppery, no
without
way.
Jeez.
No way. That's not even a possibility. God,
I think something's wrong with me. I loved this.
No, I like this too. Okay. We're not. You are not wrong
somehow,
for liking it.
Somehow, he's leading to a compliment.
Okay. Yes.
Somehow.
This is what I do.
You wouldn't know it.
The system works.
Yeah.
One hand smacks you, one hand rubs your back. That's how we do it. All right. So, Vin Diesel's been whittling his career back down to Fast and Furious. But, he, that man's been trying to launch a bunch of IPs. RIP Last Witch Hunter.
Oh, don't bring that up.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Triple X.
RIP Triple X. I love Triple X.
That's like
X.
One of Charlie's favorite
Return
movies.
Of Xander Cage was not so much fun. I love that.
Nope. Oh, I don't like many Vin Diesel things.
You like Fast, though, right?
I mean, you're not getting a lot of variety, you know?
It's yeah.
Vin Diesel is.
I mean, yeah.
It's kind of like if you don't
either like the Vin Diesel thing or you
like
don't.
Yeah.
It's not that I dislike them. It's just
you don't
that
like
I
the space dog in Riddick? Riddick yeah. With the space with the alien dog?
Very diplomatic.
Come on.
Yes. It's
Riddick
true,
does
though.
Kill someone with a teacup, and that was like one of the cool scenes in it.
Yeah, yep. Riddick was awesome. But anyway.
Oh, you're
he's
right,
trying to come back, Vin Diesel, and launch a new comic book property in Bloodshot, the adaptation of the Valiant Comics character. Valiant. Yeah. Oh, for a minute, I thought he was Image. I was, like, losing it here. And so we got a trailer for the Bloodshot movie, which we've known is happening for a very long time, and we've all been kind of, like, ready to tuck and roll and see something truly horrible come out of that. But Vin Diesel pleasantly surprised. On a day with Star Wars, people were still kind of like, oh, yeah, like, pleasantly surprised by this Bloodshot trailer, which is just called... In Vin Diesel's Edge of Tomorrow, yo, which is like my name
I
for this movie.
I did see that comment in the show notes. Yo. I did laugh at that.
Because it's basically, they take the Bloodshot character and mythos and they spin it into this interesting kind of sci-fi movie about a soldier who's killed and brought back with nanotech. But they're using these kind of programming to kind of make him commit these assassinations. And he's kind of stuck in this loop and hearing this song. And it's like... Edge of Tomorrow. I forget. Terminator meets like. Would you say? Was it you who said like it's like Terminator meets Memento?
I did not, but I wish I did.
That's a good quote. Yeah.
I'll take.
Yeah,
that for
I mean that was a good quote.
I mean, a lot of that is in the comics.
Yeah,
is it like that is the characters, mm-hmm. The nanites, and like the being essentially used as a weapon, and like all that stuff. I mean, that was very true to form. I just thought the humor and the self-awareness of some of the scenes was the most pleasant surprise, you know, and I also think they found an interesting way. I mean, the only Bloodshot people have seen thus far and on a screen is Jason David Frank's Bloodshot from Ninjak versus the Valiant Universe, right? Which was honestly what I expected from this. I expected like straight up like Vin Diesel action, brutal, you know, knife through the skull and like that kind of stuff. Cause that's the character. The character is essentially Wolverine in the books, right? He's that's what he does. And it's always brutal. And here, that's a little toned down, and like I like that it's a little more meta and lighthearted than I thought it would be. I mean, especially the stuff with him and like I forget the guy's
Guy Pearce.
Yeah, like
anytime Guy Pearce is playing like a smarmy scientist or businessman, like I'm all for
it. It's great, and so that's really interesting.
He does that really well. Yeah.
So and the action looked. The action they showed, they didn't really, I feel like, show a ton of straight up just action scenes, but I mean,
showed a good amount.
The stuff that's there looked good. And so as long as
see a dude whipping on like a exoskeleton harness with Spider-Man arms and then going at it.
Yeah, like that stuff looked.
I like the red lit stuff. I like the sequence of his face getting blown off and then coming back together and turning around and shooting somebody.
Really cool.
And that was cool. Like, yeah. Some of the Vin Diesel dramatic moments, not so cool, but like...
It didn't stand out in a bad way, though. Yeah. Like, it wasn't terrible.
I'm home.
Yeah, and as someone...
You don't know men like me!
I didn't know that this was a comic book before I watched. I didn't know that. Hi, sorry. I'm a noob at times. I didn't know. And as someone who couldn't like have anything to base it off of, I loved it. I thought the trailer was great. I understood exactly what the movie was going to be about. I was following it almost too much. Like, I was like, oh no, they revealed the twist that the doctor's a bad guy. Like, I was actually kind of bummed that I figured that out in the trailer. Yeah. Because if I was watching that, I would have been like, shocked.
Yeah. Unless Guy Pearce is a hero, and even in Memento, when he is a hero, he's still a bad guy. So yeah. Guy Pearce is mostly bad guys.
Honestly, what? They probably did that so that when you see the movie, you're not necessarily focused on the twist and more focused. He gets to be more open with the audience, yeah. I imagine, right? That's kind of the reason you put that in. Because I agree, that would typically be a twist.
The trailer, it seems like there's a lot of dramatic irony. Like, you, the audience, are going to know a lot more than Vin Diesel's character knows. Like, you'll see him passed out and them, talking trash and doing
I love that.
It's kind of like a RoboCop feel to it. Like,
I hate it when I don't know. It drives me crazy. I love actually knowing. Makes me feel a little bit like God.
Oh, wow. I did not see that going there. I'm not going to lie.
Neither did I. Okay.
But yeah, I really liked it.
This is the beginning of like five conversations.
It almost was like Matrix-y.
Beginning of five
too.
Conversation journey to where Janelle's like, yes, and when I have them strapped in, knives in my hand.
Little puppet.
And it's purge night, I feel like God. Like, yeah. But like, yes, knowing does make you more godlike. So
destroying things, apparently.
Janelle, in for Bloodshot with a god complex.
I'm about it.
Okay.
That was the general impression too online, was like, it was all that like, hey.
Yeah, I mean,
everyone
if you look at the UK version of the trailer, it actually ends with a hashtag, do you feel like God now?
No way.
No, I'm just joking.
Oh, God. This is why you put me on this.
You sold that really well.
President Blonde.
It's okay. Like, yeah, I think it does give, in all seriousness, I think it does give enough of the movie away to make, like I said, I was surprised by how they hooked this as a sci-fi movie, like, even more so than just, like, a comic book action movie. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's, like, an interesting sci-fi premise. And, like, I was like, oh, no, I can get down with a good sci-fi hook, and this one managed to do that, so... Bloodshot, pleasantly surprised. It's not as hard.
I'm interested to see, because the only bummer about this, because of course Valiant had grand plans at the beginning of, we're going to launch our own universe and all the other characters are coming. And now the licenses to those characters are like three different studios.
They went Marvel in the 90s.
So like, I think like Paramount has the EXO and like somebody else. There's another company that has like two other prominent stars character-wise. So it won't even be under Sony. Or they'd have to make some kind of deal or whatever.
No, I think just one company.
It's
Paramount has...
Is it EXO?
Has all of them. Sony has Bloodshot because they got rid of all their rights. Because they were going to do Harbinger.
That's right.
And then they were going to do a crossover, Harbinger Wars.
So now they can still do all that because they have everybody
else. Good
for
them to avoiding things that nobody wants to see.
But Bloodshot, well, you don't want to... I would love to see a good EXO movie.
See, like, I have a soft spot for Valiant because that was when it was created in the 90s. I was a kid and they had all those terrible foil covers and stuff. Like, I collected all of those. You know, I didn't read them.
Die cut.
I was
foil.
Product of the 90s comic book.
Yeah, no, I read them all. I had a lot of them and I couldn't stand most of them.
But the reboot was really good. Like, the
I had already accepted Image really Comics as a knockoff Marvel and I couldn't do it again.
I mean, if you pick one Valiant book. I mean, I've also liked the Dr. Mirage stuff, but as far as EXO's run is fantastic.
It's been consistently solid.
The new one. Mm. So good.
The original one, too.
Yeah.
The original.
Yeah, EXO Man of War was all, good. I mean, never bad. I'm not crapping on that. Like, yeah.
So I would like to see a good version of that. I don't know if we'll get that. But
no, I don't know if the cloud is there.
Yeah, no, we'll see.
I don't know if the cloud is there. But check out the Bloodshot trailer. It's up on comicbook.com. When we come back, we are going to deep dive into our review of HBO's Watchmen, and Matt is going to break down all the big things happening in comics this week, so be sure to stay tuned for that.
Selling a little or a lot?
Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
We haven't really done much of a lead-in or coverage of Watchmen on the show because I didn't know what the hell. Yeah, we did the first trailer and we were like, what the hell is this show going to be about? And none of the marketing really solved any of that since then. It was already kind of like weird because I feel like Watchmen is starting off from a weird place. I didn't even remember it was premiering this week until we were in a meeting and like it was part of my job.
Yeah.
And even then I was barely aware. So I was like kind of like shook on like whether people, what the level of awareness and buzz was for this because they didn't really reveal much. It wasn't like a big hook. It was interesting trailers. And it was kind of like we said at the time, it's like a weird concept because Watchmen is a hard, this show is a hard concept to sell at all because diehard fans of the comics, whereas most comic book fans would like to see a continuation of something and you told them they were going to continue this world, they'd be like, cool, like awesome. Watchmen is like that one book where people are like, you're doing something beyond Alan Moore's end? No, no. I remember like just getting into this business in like 10 years ago when the movie was just about to hit theaters. And all of the conversations and arguments online about that, which turned out pretty okay, like Zack Snyder's Watchmen.
I like Watchmen.
Yeah, so do I. And I even like the changes he makes, and I'm okay with that. So this show coming along and adding a whole new chapter that was never based on any book and all of that is a hard sell for the diehard fans. And to the casual fans, it's like, what the hell is going on?
You're starting midway through the movie.
I can speak on that. I didn't see the movie. I haven't read the comics, but I dived into the show, and it was cool for me to experience it.
This
I
is
still
why you're here,
don't
Janelle. We need these
know.
Perspectives.
Well, I'm telling you, I still don't really know like how these are comic book or superhero related in any way at all. Like it all just seems normal until squids start falling from the sky. That is literally the only thing that made me go, oh. What? There's another dimension? And I didn't even realize that it was another, it was a different dimension attack until the guy was being berated in the like pod. It was super confusing. Yeah, sorry. Spoilers.
Spoiler
warning. I didn't even realize.
Oh, yeah, we should tell you. We're going to talk full spoilers about Watchmen.
It was not what I had expected at all based on the artwork. Like, I thought it was going to be like futuristic. I had no idea what time it was set in. I didn't know where it was set, nothing, but I left wanting to see the next episode and also like shook with the end of the first episode.
I wish there was like video of someone like you or someone,
watching
any
it.
Fans' reaction.
Yeah, when, it's like a
they
live
don't know what to expect from this property and then squids start falling.
I dig it though. I'm so about that. I'm like I'm a Whovian, so like the weird stuff, time travel, interdimensional, anything that's weird hooks me. Like that's honestly that I'm so curious about that I want to continue watching the show. I'm like, well, where did this come from? What the hell was that about? It makes no sense. Like out of nowhere.
It's a pretty good accurate description of Watchmen's premiere if you are not even if you're familiar with the comic, there's still a lot in this that is still like, what?
Yeah.
I liked it a lot actually. Similar to you, like I don't think you had to be in some ways I think it's better not to be a comic book fan coming into this show. Because the show does its own job of world building and kind of establishing mythos that is built off the end of the events of the comic, but kind of exists on its own. this show is not like a direct translation of the comic in kind of any way, except for the characters that it references.
Yeah.
Okay. And even then, we don't know anything about what these characters are like now.
Wow.
Because there's time has passed. So much time has passed. And
did they say how much time has passed, by the way?
Well, all that stuff happens in the 80s.
Yeah, all that stuff happened in the 80s. This is present day. So it's been about 30 years.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Well, they also showed the whole intro was...
Yeah, the intro. So, like, yeah, let's talk about that.
1920s.
Very, very hard to watch, but...
Very hard to watch.
I mean, so people don't even really know about the Tulsa race riots.
Yeah. So, like, yeah, the show opens, and that kind of shocked me, because, like, I'm a history buff, and this, like, was a major... I mean, this is a fascinating piece of history in the fact that it's a buried piece of history, mm-hmm. and it's also, like, one of the worst terrorist attacks, domestic terrorist attacks in American history. It's also the worst race-related, like, attack or violence in American history. And Watchmen very boldly opens with this scene in Tulsa, Oklahoma in 1921, which is the time of the Tulsa race massacres, or the Greenwood massacre, which was Greenwood district of Tulsa, became this very economically successful section of the city for African Americans, and was called Black Wall Street. They had businesses, they had this whole economic base. It was like fully functioning part of the city, and some incident happened between like a black guy and a white girl, and then it blew up into these whole riots where, like, the black people defended themselves at this courthouse and shot a few of the white people, and then it just exploded. And it became this state-sanctioned operation to go into this black neighborhood, tear it apart, kill a bunch of people, burn it down, and basically do that. And, like, everything you see in there is a real recreation of it. So, like, you know, all the violence, people getting shot in the street, but the airplanes, too. Like, the government...
That's what I was going to
ask. Yeah, the Tulsa government, like, let white pilots get in these planes and launch from this airfield, fly over it, bomb the city, or bomb Greenwood, and snipe people with, like, you know, guns from the airplanes in the streets and do all that. And then the city of Oklahoma, and, like, Oklahoma and Tulsa then basically scrubbed it from all the history books. It was scrubbed from every one of the state history books, like, national history books, and just covered up. And even the people who lived there were, like, forced to live there and basically never mention it, never talk about it. And this went on until, like, 1996, when they finally formed a committee who then came together and then finally published a conclusion in 2001 that said, yes, this thing happened that happened, and we're going to give reparations. And so far they have a state park that says this thing happened. So that's the payback so far. And they opened it, and it was a very powerful thing that, like, yeah, somebody said, I think, who did one of you guys, like, oh, no, Russ sent me, like, people said when they saw the pilot, like, at a convention, they were like, man, Google searches for the Tulsa massacre is going to go skyrocket. And sure enough, it's like skyrocketed. So that was a very powerful, bold opening. But it really did a good job of setting the stage for what then you this episode's about, which was totally unexpected with this whole thing about race relations in Oklahoma and kind of like the stuff that's still bubbling under the surface. Because that was the whole thing about the Greenwood massacre. It was like all this stuff that had been bubbling over the surface kind of exploded out into this thing. And that's kind of what this first episode is kind of referencing again. And in history that we decide to scrub away, which
was
brilliant.
And they, like, tie it together, too, because of, like, you know, the kid that is the survivor. Like, in the beginning of the episode, you see a character, and at the end of the episode, you see a character that is probably shouldn't be able to still be in existence. But it's just, it's crazy to see that, because it just ties it up with a little bow. It was really nicely done.
And they tie it together to the comic as well, because... this is a theme, obviously, that's going to tie back to how Watchmen ended. And Watchmen has a controversial ending because basically, oh man, Janelle, just put your thinking cap on for this one. So basically, Jeremy Irons' character in the show launches this whole, it's a, the whole thing is a mystery. These heroes are investigating about somebody's trying to cause, you know, World War III is about to happen in this alternate America. And Jeremy Irons is the smartest man in the world. He puts together this plan to manipulate all the heroes, to get rid of Dr. Manhattan, who's like the Superman, to manipulate world events. And then he launches this fake terrorist attack where he has all the world's best writers and scientists and artists go to this island where they create this monster that will, he transports into Manhattan and sets off this psychic bomb. It kills a bunch of people. It's this big, like, world-changing event. But they think that there's this attack from another dimension, and so all the world leaders band together and they avert World War III, and it brings peace to Earth. But he had to kill all these people to do it.
He has a little Thanos.
Yeah.
Little Thanos
and
problem.
The other heroes ultimately don't punish him. Like, he gets away with it, essentially. And the heroes that know either live now in assumed identities and in different lives, or Dr. Manhattan leaves Earth. Rorschach got killed because he was the one who was going to ruin the whole thing, and they killed him. And so this ties back to the beginning of this episode because it's basically a history that has been scrubbed over, this massive act of violence that has just been covered up and swept under the rug. And we've assumed, you know, it's been assumed in this world that everybody can go on and just live in this better world that's going to come. And of course, that's not the case. And
wow,
this is where this kind of like is now exploring. But yeah, that's it doesn't. Awesome. Yeah, it's great.
It's amazing.
Like, and it does a wonderful really well job done. Of grounding all this in the story of building this world where in Oklahoma, they show you how police have changed because there were these reactions to police and vigilantes. Now the police all wear yellow masks around their face. Okay. And they don't identify them. Police are all secret. And so, like, the whole thing kicks off.
They have cover stories and everything.
They have cover stories. Like, nobody.
Because I've seen the yellow mask.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's really great imagery in throughout the episode. It's really well shot. And so, like, it's all creepy because you go on a police thing and, like, all of them are just standing around. They have all their masks on.
They can't identify themselves. They can't carry. They have to ask for permission to get their gun to be unlocked for them. So, like, in the opening scene, like, obviously one of the officers is struggling to get his gun unlocked.
And it kicks off about this whole story of Oklahoma police begin to figure out that there's a resurgence of this alt-right group called the 7th Cavalry, which is basically alt-right people who saw Rorschach's journal when it was exposed.
Well, that's one of the coolest things is how this world is set up in the aftermath of Watchmen, because at the end of Watchmen, Rorschach, before he finds out that Ozymandias is behind it, he has a journal that he sends to the conservative newspaper, the New Frontiersman, which you see in this show. So it makes sense that Middle America would be all conspiracy theorists that believe that there was this alien hoax attack, and now they're like these weird QAnon type alt-right.
Their masks, you know? Are so creepy, too. Yeah.
And that was Rorschach. Rorschach wore a mask that was a Rorschach blot that moved on its own.
Yes.
And so those are like the masks they wear. And the whole thing kicks off when a police stops a guy and realizes he's part of the 7th Cavalry, and that goes badly, and it starts off a war between the police and this.
Oh my God, this sounds amazing.
I'm telling you, you have to see it.
There are a lot of things that, you know, like people can have problems with it because the way DC Comics treated, the way DC Comics treated Alan Moore, they could have given him the rights to this stuff, but it's too lucrative, so they're not going to.
Yeah.
And if you don't like Alan Moore,
is a whole different, like, I feel like Alan Moore.
But
is
I mean,
a
like,
creator,
there are a lot of critics that don't enjoy the show because of that. You know, they don't want to. They don't think it's ethical to even have anything to do with it.
Yeah.
So I think it's just an interesting, like, that's a valid conversation. But they're kind of missing out on a really good take on this on these mythos. I've seen the first 6 episodes, and the first one left me a little uneasy, but man, it picks up. And like by episode 3, it's like, this is Watchmen.
And this is a fantastic cast, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Led by Regina King, who, you know, I really tweeted out, I don't think there's anything that Regina King can't make awesome.
That's true.
And it's
like,
true.
Yeah, like I was just going back through the hits, like everything from Boys in the Hood to like Boondocks to, what was that, Southland to like now this to all the movies she's getting Oscars and Golden Globes for. Like, good for Regina King. She deserves this. She's been in, like, the game a long time, and she is so awesome.
She was in Miss Congeniality, too, right?
Yeah.
The best.
That's Matt's reference. Miss Congeniality 2.
On Friday?
Wow. Can you throw Maleficent
in
there somewhere?
Oh, you mean the Miss Congeniality 2 lady. Yeah.
I like that.
Yes, we do. And this her playing Sister Knight, her as a superhero vigilante character and, like, a strong female character in her relationship with Yahya Abdul-Mateen and like him being like the Lois Lane. They have this awesome gender kind
of
flip.
It's great.
Where he's like the Lois Lane type in this first thing. While he protects the kids while she's like going out like superheroing and stuff.
I love that he just doesn't even ask questions.
No.
He's like, okay, babe.
Yeah,
I got you.
Yeah, he's like, yep, all right. Yeah, and Don Johnson really shines in this pilot. He's really great, which is not something I thought I'd be saying.
Nash Bridges!
Yeah, Nash Bridges is the man in this. And Tim Blake Nelson's awesome in it, but the real shining is Panda by far.
Panda. Everyone hates that guy.
Yeah. So like the cops all wear masks, and like she said, they have to ask for access to their guns because they can't just carry guns. And so the guy who makes the determines, like the master, the sergeant at arms, who determines when they can like release their guns or not, is a guy who wears a panda head.
It's like an actual like stuff.
Yeah,
I've seen panda referenced on Twitter.
It's
like I don't know how many times.
Odd.
It's not. Yeah, this is not a designer callback.
But the silver one is like really cool.
Panda. Yeah. No. And like yeah. And so Yeah, and it does a good job of just taking the weird world of Watchmen, because Watchmen is this alternative 1980s where Richard Nixon was never stopped and he became permanent president. And yeah, all these things about kind of consumerism, fascism, like we're pushed to this nth degree. And just seeing living in the bones of that world and having it built back up has been very interesting. And I'm really looking forward to more Watchmen.
Me too. Yeah.
It's good.
And JK already knows, six episodes in, he's like, it's good.
Oh, I'm so jealous.
Yeah.
Just rubbing my hands.
Yeah. He's living in that Brandon just Davis wait. Space. Burdened Smart's by knowledge. By...
Jean Smart's in it, and she yeah. is Jean
Smart?
Awesome.
Yeah, Jean Smart from Legion's in it, and yeah, she's supposed to be really awesome. Legion. She's Silk Spectre 2. Is
Shh, that's a spoiler.
I loved Legion.
Well, they already say it. I mean, they literally say it, like, in the show.
He's going to give me a hard time. So,
yeah, she plays one of the original Watchmen, too, so that's going to be really cool.
Designing women's
charms. All right, Matt, take us home today. Stop. Stop.
Yes. I even told her. She's like, oh, Legion's cool. I said, I know, but if I say Designing Women, he's going to give me a hard time.
No, we all watch Designing Women. Not all of us will reference it, though, but...
Wow.
Take us home, buddy. put those reference skills to good use. And tell us what's hot in comics this week. What should we be checking out?
So speaking of age properties, Angel, Boom Studios brought back the Buffyverse, and Angel and Buffy are now in a crossover event called Hellmouth. This is kind of a new take on the mythos. So even if you watch the show, they kind of remix stuff. Certain characters are not introduced yet, and so it's kind of a new spin on that. It's really good so far. So there's enough in there if you watch the shows to, like, you don't need to have watched them. You can come in, there's new characters, there's new stuff for you to explore. But if you do, you can kind of see where certain things are going, and it's cool. There's a lot of Easter eggs and stuff. So Angel number 6 is out. DC continues to wow me with Action Comics 1016. This last two issues of Action Comics are so good. Like, this is what I guess people, when they first pitched Bendis on Superman, saw. And it's been kind of lackluster until these last two issues. And Naomi is, like, the reason for it. And providing this kind of younger character who's learning her powers and has a kind of unique family. And putting Clark in the middle of this and having, like, that's made Superman more interesting. So if you're looking to get into Superman, these last two issues have been fantastic. Batman Beyond number 37 kind of introduces, by the way, spoilers again, I just like walking spoilers. Batwoman Beyond starts this arc, so they're kind of doing their own take on that. We don't know who it is yet, but the issue tends to suggest it's either like Barbara Gordon or somebody else. So if you're a big fan, like, this comic series does tie in to the show. So if you liked the old cartoon, there are things that kind of make their way into this. It's not like a direct thing, but there's a lot of tethers there. So the Flash stuff has been really cool when they reintroduced the Flash, Wally West's Flash, into it. So this is kind of interesting. It's pretty good. Batman Curse of the White Knight number 4. This first, there's three. It opens with like 3 pages. And those first 3 pages are phenomenal. Like, it's such a gut punch. There's such a, and spoilers for those, Gordon was shot in the last issue, actually was stabbed and then shot and then thrown off a building. So it's like a little bit overkill.
Brutal.
A little bit overkill.
The old Gotham trio.
but this issue starts out with like 3 pages of like Barbara seeing him in the hospital. And then there's a reaction from Bruce that Bruce is kind of, they do the harder edged Bruce. Like, he's not the jovial one in this book, but there's just like such a moment of vulnerability when he realizes like what's happening to Gordon, and there's like just one page, it's just like, oh, hit me like right here in the feels. So definitely check that out. G.I. Joe number 2. I remember talking about this last month. The first G.I. Joe surprised the snot out of me. I didn't really expect anything from it, and they killed off like a major character, and Cobra runs everything, and so it kind of did this topsy turvy thing on the world. And so this one's coming out. Number 2 comes out this week. So definitely check that out. Amazing Mary Jane number 1. If you've been wanting a Mary Jane solo series, you now have your wish.
Hashtag not my Spider.
I mean, this just takes off directly from like the core Spider-Man book. So if you're interested, you can definitely check that out. Marauders number 1 comes out. I've been waiting.
You're so excited.
I know, and it's so good, by the way.
He's like, grinning like ear to ear right now.
It's been pretty entertaining.
Oh,
so far.
So good. Like, I'm so gushing about that book. You can read our full reviews on Wednesday, every Wednesday, but mine, like, you're gonna like essentially see this in written form, because like, I'm gushing. It's so good. Everything about it, I love it. Also, Strike Force number 2. If you've been waiting for more Spider-Woman, Jessica Drew,
She is in this book, but there's a bunch of other characters too. But really, it's about Jessica Drew.
When's Cardiac arriving?
I don't know, but real quick detour. So I was reviewing WWE 2K20, and you know who my wrestler, what my wrestler name is?
Cardiac.
Cardiac.
Oh.
It's amazing. That's it's awesome. Finally, for the ones who, one, who have kids, but also just who like the Secret Life of Pets movies, Titan Comics has a Secret Life of Pets Volume 2, number 1 comes out. The art is adorable. So, and it's got Snowball, Superhero Snowball, and Duke, and the whole gang. So I know you, you're so judgy.
I can
right
get
now.
Down with this.
It's so good. It's so fun. And so, yeah, if you're,
I love
if you're looking
Max.
For that. So, yeah, very much, though. And also, take a look at the, because that's it for comics. But if you pay attention to comicbook.com, we will have reviews of WWE 2K20. You'll have my review of that. And then Marvel Champions is the Marvel tabletop game for Fantasy Flight. We will also be doing that. So, fans of games, comics, tabletop, everything, make sure to check out the site. So that's it. Comics. I'm plugging, man. I'm plugging.
All right. That'll do it for this episode of Comic Book Nation. We want to thank you for listening in, and if you're just now discovering the show, as so many of you are, please be sure to check in every Wednesday and Friday, because that is when we post new episodes, 2 a week, Wednesday and Friday. Be sure to check them both out on comicbook.com. There you can subscribe to our RSS feed, where you can get regular updates of the show so you don't have to remember, or you can subscribe on your favorite listening platform. We are on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Google Playlists, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, iHeartRadio, or you can tell any Amazon Alexa device to fire up Comic Book Nation Podcast, and it'll do it right for you. If you want to continue the discussion with us, just hit us up at the hashtag Comic Book Nation, or you can find me at Kofi Outlaw.
You can find me at Matt Aguilar CB.
And you can find me at Janelle Wheeler.
JK, you want to plug anything over there?
You can follow me at Woe is Joe, but I mostly just talk about the Utah Jazz and how much the Tennessee Titans are depressing. So
that's actually
all right. So you can follow me, Matt, accurate. Or Janelle on Twitter, as we said, and
pretty accurate.
Ignore me. Put
pretty
me on
accurate.
If you love the show, please go on iTunes, leave us a 5-star review. We are coming up next episode. We got to fit in like a whole big review. We're going to do a
time.
Review slam. So, like, yeah, we're going to give producer Jim Guiscardi a long weekend by reading a bunch of reviews. So this is it. Next episode, get your last reviews in. You want some free Comic Book Nation t-shirts? Be sure to get those in now.
10 shirts apiece.
You don't have to watch it for that.
Matt's crazy promise will be where we end this episode. We want to thank you guys for tuning with us. As always, we are Comic Book Nation, and we'll see you next time. Peace.
Deuces.